The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. This program will take you behind the scenes and deepen your understanding about the patterns and perspectives of leadership today. Now, here's your host, John Schmidt.
Well, hello. Welcome, everyone, again to this week's edition of Zoomed Leadership. I am your host, as you know, John Schmidt, and again today, as every week, I will be taking us out to the big picture, into the up close and personal, and toward a world of desirable futures, those rich, of course, as we always talk about, with the essence of constant renewal. Well, it is Monday, and I love Mondays. It is yet another opportunity to join you for both an enjoyable hour, but most importantly, a great guest of our times. And I think today continues where we have been on Zoomed with a through-line examination of the world, sort of the larger view, some of the larger scale, big picture systems that we've been talking about, and within that, what's not working, what's headed toward, in some ways, that we talk about breakdown, and most importantly, today, what practical actions are being taken to transition ourselves collectively into an era of epical upshifts and into an era of new forms of sustainable living. Our focus today is on slow money. And I say, yes, slow money. It's not fast money or fast money trading that we see daily in our global financial system or that we have talked about more. And it is not what we see on the afternoon and evening on CNBC. We're talking slow money. And our guest today is Woody Tash, founder and chairman of Slow Money, 501c3 nonprofit formed a couple of years ago in 2008 to catalyze the flow of investment capital to small enterprises, in particular small food enterprises, and to promote new principles of fiduciary responsibility that can underpin sustainable agriculture and what we talk about here on Zoom, the emergence of a restorative economy. Among other ingredients today, and I've mentioned to Woody as we've gotten started, I want to really answer two questions. At first, at the outset, where does our food come from? And second, where does our money go? Because I think these two questions, to me, bring together an important intersection that until recently, until Woody really jump-started the slow money focus and movement, this intersection, to me, has been laying fallow amid a larger view of the economy, the energy, the environment, some of the breakdowns we've talked about, or those to come. So with Woody today, we want to explore what I think is an essential new strategy for investing in local food systems and what should come after industrial agriculture and industrial finance. Because since the government isn't too interested and industry itself is, as we've talked about often, very self-interested, I think Woody suggests that we need a new type of investment structure to put money directly into sustainable farming. From what I'm able to gather out of this, I'm not an expert in it, but slow money is inspired by the slow food movement and by realizing that there is a dizzying speed of money flows in our world this 21st century that have ripped the finance as we know it away from its moorings and reality. And I think what we'll find is Woody proposes just the opposite, that we invest in food systems down the road, meaning locally, we slow the money down, and we watch it do real things in the real world. But I think most importantly, what is really compelling about our conversation today is the credibility and experience that Woody brings to the table. He is also Chairman Emeritus of Investors Circle, which is a nonprofit network of angel investors, venture capitalists, foundations, and other family offices that have moved $130 million to 200 early stage companies and venture funds dedicated to sustainability, and we love it. Before that, he was treasurer of the Jesse Smith Noyes Foundation, where he pioneered mission-related investing. He's an experienced capital and venture capital investor and entrepreneur, served on numerous boards, profit, nonprofit. His book, Inquiries into the Nature of Slow Money, is a backdrop and an initiating view to slow money actions in the world. Woody, great to have you with us here on Zoomed.
Geez, John, I'm exhausted. I need a nap.
Well, I always like to start. My listeners know it, but you've been doing great work. I wanted to give it justice, Woody.
Well, thank you.
But maybe we can start today with the questions that I posed, maybe the starter, because that poses a reality of where are we now relative to where the food comes from and where the money goes.
Well, those two questions, I think it's interesting that you kind of lighted on those two questions because they're so basic. And we have become better, let's say, in the last several years, mostly courtesy of slow food, the slow food movement, and now it's called the local food movement, organics in general. People started thinking about where their food comes from. And it could be a number of different impetuses that get you there, whether it be nutrition, you know, fighting obesity, fighting hunger, some of the environmental issues and whatnot. But when you ask the second question alongside the first one, you know, where does our money go? You know, where does our food come from? Where does our money go? And you, let's say, overlay those two things and begin to realize that, let's say, if you wanted to answer food comes from the soil, that's a really basic answer, right, on one mm-hmm. level, not just that from down the street per se, but it comes from the soil, and our money is moving away from the soil. Obviously, I'm tipping my hands, let's say, how I've come to answer those two questions. But if our money is streaming, let's say, to smokestacks in China, but food comes from the soil, what's going to happen to the soil and our food? And the answer is they're going to get degraded. So thank you for answering those two questions. We could spend the whole hour just kind of going, you know, kind of riffing on them. But I think you're correct to kind of draw our attention to them for starters.
Well, and I think that's been part of our conversation here, Woody. We have been talking about the big systems, the implications of connecting the dots on the economy, on energy, the relationship of that to food production, the big industrial production that we have now. So, you know, I think it's always good for us and our listeners to kind of get oriented to the reality that there are some important elements in our future, food and then the environmental underpinnings. I think soil is a great place to start, but it's the connection that you made here to money, Woody, that to me was very, very provocative, caught my attention when I first became aware of your work.
Well, before we go back to the soil money connection, I think let's just go another direction based on what you just said. It's not that we've just become good about asking where our food comes from. There's another big thing going on right now, which is kind of where's our carbon going, right? I would say over the last 5 years or so, it's kind of astonishing how few years it is, really. Just in the last 5 years or so, the global conversation about climate change is different. You can say it's courtesy of Al Gore, whatever you want to say. But, you know, even as recently as 5 years ago, people were not really, let's say, copping to this idea that there might be an irreversible change to climate. And today, even if you don't believe there is, and I'm sure most of your listeners do believe there is, but even if you don't, you can't really be participating in intelligent public discourse without deciding something about climate change. You'd have to say, I don't believe it's caused by humans, or I do, but you have to talk about it. It's there. It's been established as a serious topic of international concern. And that's very recent. And we have to remind ourselves, very, very recent. Certainly 10 years ago, if you went around talking about climate change in public, you would have been dismissed as kind of a kook. So the questions before, you know, the idea that we could be causing irreversible damage to systems is something we have to grapple with. Now, the food part of that is still way behind in public discourse. Very few people, relatively few people, realize how integral food production is to climate change problems. Mm-hmm. And it's really almost astonishing how direct the connections are, down to and including things like our system of large mechanized tillage of the land using big machines and using petrochemical inputs is the exact opposite of what we would need from a climate change perspective, meaning it's very petrochemical intensive. That's thing one. Very petrochemical intensive. Most analysts say it takes 9 or 10 calories of petrochemical energy to produce 1 calorie of food energy. So that's pretty crazy. Beyond that, we actually are breaking carbon down in the soil and releasing it into the atmosphere by our tillage techniques. So we're doing everything kind of ass backwards from a climate change perspective. Why? Because all of these systems were invented when we didn't know there was such a thing as climate change. And it's hard to change, you know, once you have the embedded momentum. Things are right. So I haven't even gotten to the money part of this yet. I just wanted to try to link backwards to the climate change thing. I think it's important.
Well, I think it is, and that's part of the ground bed where we have had conversations, and we've talked about sort of the linkages to that in some ways, and all the, I think, the areas you're talking about here, Woody. And there's a trajectory of this, and there's a trajectory of what we're talking about in terms of food and production and money. Maybe you can really sort of point us from, you know, where we're starting here with what, if we're looking forward, what can we anticipate out of the question, whether we're talking about the carbon question, we're talking about impact on food and soil, what's the trajectory?
Well, the trajectory isn't great. you know, if I'm trying to summarize all this, I've been talking to a lot of people about this, obviously, the last several years, and I always get to a point in the conversation where I say, well, you just have to decide what you believe, because there are so many different facts, and the things are so out of control, and the questions are so big. At some point, you just have to decide what you believe. So on the trajectory question, it feels to me, or I could say I believe, that we are on a, you know, we're heading towards a crash. Now, I'm not talking about, quote, just a financial crash, unquote. I'm talking about a correction, let's say, in natural systems of agriculture that is analogous to the correction we just had with subprime mortgages and derivatives. And that is, we've just been for the last 50 years going in a straight line towards how do we get more and more food out of the land for less and less dollars. And you do that through the system that we have. It's an extremely effective system. The problem is not that it doesn't work. The problem is that it works too well. And we've, let's say, created a highly commoditized, highly uniform system of agriculture that has driven biodiversity out of the system. Almost in every crop variety, we're dealing with only a few percent of commercial varieties in production today compared to, let's say, what we're in production in 1900. So we're driving diversity out of the system. We're driving towards cheap commodity production of grains. The vast majority of those grains goes to livestock. And so without, I won't even belabor the point anymore, just say the trajectory is not sustainable. And it is an exact mirror to my thinking of what we've done in finance, and this is why slow money, it's not just slow food, it's slow money. I think of derivatives as the same kind of a thing. We've been squeezing, you know, the risk-return calculus as much as we can. We've been squeezing every drop of returns and risk management and arbitrage and all these things for the last, maybe not 50 years, because that system has really accelerated just in the last 20 years. And that system, I think everyone listening knows in their guts, isn't sustainable. That's why we had a 1,000-point drop in 20 minutes a few months ago. We almost don't even talk about it anymore. So,
great, Woody. And let me just interrupt. I can hear the music in the background here. I think I hear our first segment coming to close. But that's what I was hoping we would get your view on in terms of the trajectory, in terms of the reality of it. I think that's a great context setter. Let's take a short pause here then, Woody, and let's come back. Let's pick it up from that and into slow money, connect the dots into the money even more specifically. Listeners, take a break. Come right back. We'll continue with Woody here in just a minute. Thanks.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network. The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership? Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8888. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind. There's a course offered on Seventh Wave Network that you never saw offered in college. One that provides information on how to transform ancient wisdom teachings into everyday life. You'll learn how to create from your spirit and explore the world with all of your senses. Participation is encouraged. Enroll in Spirituality 101, the course you can't afford to miss, with your host, Reverend Norma. Classes in session every Friday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time, 12 noon Pacific Time, in your favorite classroom, Seventh Wave Network.
It's all Arizona, all over the world. If you're a local Arizona high school sports fan, or if you're a transplanted fan somewhere else in the world, have we got a show for you. The first internet sports radio talk show focusing solely on high school sports is The Coach's Corner with Scott Lovely. Tune in to talk about your favorite teams, players, or coaches. It's 100% Arizona high school sports coverage and a little bit more. Tune in Mondays at 4 p.m. Pacific Time, 7 p.m. Eastern, to the Voice America Sports Channel.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, back today, Woody Tash joining us, Slow Money, our focus and conversation. And Woody started to lay the groundwork in the first segment about more of the backdrop of the reality, the trajectory of that, and from that comes Slow Money. Maybe you can point to us to the nature with this trajectory. What do we do about it, and what does Slow Money have to do with that?
Well, I suddenly find myself thinking, John, of one last little trajectory kind of placeholder or whatever, and that is the idea of steroids. It's like everything has been about maximum growth, maximum speed, maximum scale. So much, and even though we're facing things like too big to fail and all these kind of obvious symptoms of things being unmanageable and top-heavy and imbalanced, we still tend to want to gravitate towards the power answer. You know, well, we'll just come up with something even bigger and faster and stronger and whatever. And this is really like the steroid school of finance and agriculture. So if you think about the agricultural piece of this for a second, you know, we figured out how after World War II to put nitrogen and other chemicals on the soil, just a handful of chemicals as fertilizer, and then another handful of chemicals as biocides to kill weeds and pests and whatnot. And that very simplified chemical formula proved to be remarkably effective at growing lots of stuff.
Yes,
but it's like steroids. You know, you do it for a while, and then it destroys the body. And it should not be a mystery once anyone. And this is very simple, oversimplified. But sometimes the truth is better if it's oversimplified. You get lost in the weeds. I guess I shouldn't say weeds in that context. But so we have become seriously imbalanced because we've pursued maximum growth for a short period of time, and it's a little scary figuring out how to get off that system. But what we found in Slow Money is, this is the good news, it's a little counterintuitive when you first hear it, but then once you feel it and you get involved with it, you realize, no, slowing down is actually a positive thing. It's not just because you can't go fast. It's not like you want to go fast and you're poor at it, so you go slow. Going slow is actually a qualitatively better way to go for certain kinds of things. And again, if you relate it to just the food system itself, I think anyone really listening, even if you're not an expert, will know it takes millennia to create an inch of topsoil. You don't create topsoil overnight. It's not just a little chemical batch. It's myriads of interactions in nature and the soil that create fertility. So if we're going to get back to a system that does not, let's say, mine the fertility, does not extract fertility in a few decades that it took millennia to make, we're going to have to slow down, and we're going to have to figure out a new way to do it. Now, so far we've been talking very generally, very abstract, about very big trajectories in historical terms. So I just want to say very quickly, I don't know where you want to, how you want to take the conversation, but I just say people should hear that thousands of us, not millions yet, but thousands of us have started doing this by coming together on a regular basis, starting to put a little of our money into some small food enterprises, and beginning to feel what it's like to take small amounts of our money. This is really important for people to hear. We're not asking people to just, like, you know, bail out of global finance, just taking small fractions of our money and beginning to invest them locally in small food enterprises. And once you start doing that, you realize that the thread kind of connects back to a lot of very big problems.
Well, I do want to go there, Woody. I'd like to get into the tangible so people can understand that, get their hands around that. But as a bridge maybe to that, I've read, and you've had an interesting quote relative to the speed of money, going back to the larger view and the financial system. And it's an interesting one. As this speed of money, as the money circulates the globe, money is sucking oxygen from the air, fertility from the soil, culture out of local communities. Maybe you can point to that, because I think that's a good bridge in terms of the tangible of what you're actually doing as well.
Well, that's a funny sentence. When I came up with that sentence about 5 years ago, I've been kind of incubating the idea for slow money for quite a while. And venture capitalists like to ask entrepreneurs for their elevator pitch. In other words, if you're stuck in an elevator for a minute, you have to say, entrepreneurs will go on forever about what they're doing. Don't make any snide comments about me, please. But that's the nature of starting things. You get totally wrapped up in it, and you want to tell everybody in the world about what you're doing. So getting it into an elevator pitch is hard for entrepreneurs. So I came up with that sentence. As it circulates the globe with ever-accelerating speed, money is sucking oxygen out of the air, fertility out of the soil, and culture out of local communities. And I thought to myself, now this is about 5 years ago, I thought to myself, that's the problem. I didn't know what the solution was. I said, that's my problem statement. And maybe 2 years ago, I was sitting talking to a retired investment banker north of San Francisco, and we had a long lunch, and it was going very well, and I'm thinking, I think I'm going to try the sentence on him. And so I said, well, you know what I actually think? His name happened to be Peter. I said, you know what I actually think, Peter? And I said the sentence to him, as it circulates the globe, et cetera. And then he didn't say anything right away, and I said, well, I kind of mean it as a metaphor. I don't mean it like that's a literal description. And he looked at me and said, no, that's literally what's happening. And I'm relating that story because it's just been amazing to me how many people from the most senior, not everybody, but I make it clear, not every financier would agree with that statement, of course, but many, a surprising number of financiers actually resonate with the fact that just the speed of capital itself has a, is very deleterious to the health of communities and the health of bioregions and the health of the soil. It's not really just a metaphor anymore. It's a real solid. So thank you for pulling that sentence out of the book.
Well, it impacted me that way. It really kind of got into the belly of a reality there, and it felt like that was a very tangible aspect and tangible link to the work that you're doing with Slow Money in this mix of people around around the communities that you're pointing to. And maybe you can say more about that, Woody, make it tangible. I know you've started initially had a conference that I read about a couple of years ago that started to bring together people on this, but you actually are doing work on the ground. Maybe you can say a little bit about it. What's going on, who's involved in it, and how is it actually really coming to bear on the trajectory and the issue that
we're
talking about?
Basically a national network and a series of local networks have started to emerge around the ideas and then the challenge of putting the ideas to work. The national network has 1,200 dues-paying members in it, just so people want to hear numbers. They've contributed anywhere from $50,000 down to $25. About 200 of them are founding members, people like Greg Steltenpole, the founder of Odwalla, and Judy Wicks, one of the co-founders of the Business Alliance for Local Living Economy, George Seaman, the CEO of Organic Valley, which is a $500 million organic dairy brand. Robert Zevin, who's often referred to as the father of social investing, an economist and money manager from Boston. So we've got a really, I'm saying that because I'm very proud of those people. I mean, it's really attractive.
Yes.
Elliot Coleman, I'll mention a few other names to put concrete on it. One of the kind of iconic organic farmers in the country. Joan Gussow, who Michael Pollan sometimes referred to as his guru, was way out ahead talking about nutritional ecology 30 years ago at Columbia. So we've really attracted a great group of people without whom none of this would be possible. And what we are doing is we are building a national network that is starting to attract a critical mass of investors and deals to it. We just had our second national meeting in Shelburne Farms, Vermont in June, and I'm really pleased to be able to say that over $1 million has already changed hands from people who were at that meeting into small food enterprises that presented at that meeting. This is just a beginning, but it's a very important beginning. So money is starting to change hands. I can say more in a second about what kind of things we're investing in. I think people might want to hear that too. And then in addition to this national network, which is continuing to scale, and our intention is to keep building this over the next several years, We also have things happening in Austin, Texas, Seattle, Madison, Wisconsin, Boston, Boulder, Pittsburgh, North Carolina, Santa Fe. So a bunch of regional efforts have just started to spring up where groups of people are meeting on a regular basis in those areas to begin figuring out how to do slow money investing in their area. And actually, each one of those is quite different. These are locally organized. So we've got the national network and local networks. And then the last piece is, while that's happening, we are now focused as a small national organization, as four of us in this little NGO, on how can we help create some new investment funds, for-profit investment funds, that would make it easy for the average investor to do some slow money investing. So we're actually talking with some leading social investment intermediaries like RSF Social Finance and Portfolio 21 and Calvert about the possible creation of some new slow money funds. It's too soon to say any details about them, but I just want people to hear. So we're working on, you know, creating new products and services. I should just say one last word, also slow munis, municipal bonds that would be investing in local food systems. So we're working on incubating those things while we're building these national and regional networks.
Fabulous, Woody. That's really even gone beyond where I was aware of in terms of the national and the regional network. I think we've got a couple of minutes, 2 minutes into the break on this segment. Maybe you can give us an idea of the kinds of deals, of kinds of investments, examples of those, smaller enterprises that you're working with.
Absolutely, because that's actually the exciting part is actually connecting the investors with the entrepreneurs. Companies like Greenling, which is a home organic delivery service in Austin, Texas. Funds like Farmland LP, which is aggregating tens of millions of dollars, hopefully as much as $100 million of investor capital to invest in small organic farms and lease them to new organic farmers. Farmers Diner has been around for quite a while in different iterations, a diner that sources food locally and serves, you know, basically hamburgers and french fries and milkshakes at family prices, but all organic and local. The Carrot Project, kind of a microloan fund for small organic farmers. Green Mountain Creamery, a startup organic creamery in Vermont. Coyote Creek, which is the only certified organic grain mill in the southern part of the country. So that will give you an idea. It's everything from individual organic farmers at a small scale all the way up through processing and distribution. And then at the high end, let's say, various financial intermediaries that will kind of help people build portfolios that will give them diversification.
Wow, that's wonderful. It's a wonderful mix there. And so maybe as I know we've got about a minute to go here on this segment here, Woody, I'd like to get a sense about, let's just take someone, let's say somebody is sitting out there and is getting very interested in this. Let's say they're in a region where something is cranking up. You can use where I am here in our studios. We're in Florida. We're in Sarasota, Florida. Sarasota is, I think, what we'll see in the years to come as an icon for sustainability, what the county is actually doing, the plan that's in play and what's going on. But then how do you actually engage? What would people do and how would they begin to think about, engage in this, thinking about it from a community standpoint? That's where I'd like to go next, if we could, Woody, because I'd like to get a picture of where people can sort of find themselves in it, how they can participate, certainly in terms of a financial way, but how they can even think about their own communities in that. Take a break, folks. Come back. Next segment with Woody. Just a moment. Come back soon. Thanks.
Stocks, bonds, investment opportunities, financial news, and talk. We can help. Call us now toll-free, 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind.
How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-8880. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
It's football, pop culture, and everything in between. Get ready for The Game Plan with Anthony Herron, a.k.a. Big Ant. Anthony has a background in college and professional football and brings the player, coach, and broadcaster perspective to this weekly roundup of the top sports news and events. Big Ant wants to hear from you, too. Tune in to The Game Plan with Anthony Herron every Tuesday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific. Perfect time on the Voice America Sports Channel. It's game time.
These days, everyone is looking for information on staying young, healthy, and fit. The Voice America Health and Wellness Network is here to help you on your quest to better health and a better you. We talk about everything from diet, fitness, and aging to substance abuse, personal growth, mental health, and much more. Learn from our experts who cover health and wellness from traditional and holistic perspectives. Tune in to the Voice America Health and Wellness Network. Healthy living starts here.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, great. Back continuing conversation today with Woody Tash. Slow money, our focus, and as we often do here on Zoom, we start with the larger view, connect the dots, understand the trajectory, understand the implications of it, talk about what the reality really provides us in terms of a context of action and new ways, new paradigms, and I think that's what we're beginning to talk about here. And as I ended the last segment, I was pointing to Woody to the fact of how can we begin to understand this in a community level, and I suspect that there's a local organizational level that gets some energy going that's owned by the community. But Woody, maybe you can say some more about what is it that you're doing as an organization that can be drawn upon by the community as we understand more about it.
Actually, I love the way you asked that, John, because what came out of our meeting in Vermont, we had 600 people. This is just our second national meeting. We had 600 people from over 30 states and several foreign countries, and one of the afternoons was dedicated to this local national thing. In other words, here we are promoting a system. I mean, ultimately what we would like to see is 1 million investors investing 1% of their money directly in local food systems. That's one way we think about our 10-year objective as an NGO. And for that to happen, you're going to have to have it's local. I mean, you've got to have lots of robust small-scale local intermediation that's connecting local investors to small food enterprises in each region. That's going to take some doing because it's kind of the opposite of finance as centralized kind of global finance as it's currently practiced. And the first step in this is going to sound perhaps like the most abstract, but I really don't think it is, and that's the slow money principles. We have a little one-pager called the slow money principles. It's six principles. The last one talks about putting back as much as we take out and ask some questions. And we can talk about them some more if you want. I'll follow your lead on that. But the reason I'm starting with that is that you mentioned my book before, and I would say the first thing people can do if they want to, if they kind of are intrigued or more than intrigued, want to see something like this happen, is actually, forgiving the self-promotional part of this, they should check the book out because it has been an extremely effective catalyst for this conversation. And I'm 59 years old. That doesn't mean I'm right. But I've come to some opinions about things, and I guess this one is my most my my most heartfelt core conviction. That is, if we don't think differently about money, really think and feel differently, really admit how broken the thing is, we're never going to act in a radical enough way. And I say radical in the root sense of the word, not a political sense. Mm-hmm. We have to start doing things in a profoundly different way. And the first step is we have to be willing to think differently. The Slow Money Principles are a one-pager that 12,000 people have signed. We have not really promoted it aggressively yet because we're a small new NGO. I hope we'll have hundreds of thousands of people signing at some point. And as crazy as it may sound to someone who's listening with an investor hat on to say signing these principles is an act, an important act, I really believe it is. So I hope people will check out the Slow Money Principles at our website.
And I'd like to do that. I'd like to get that into the last segment, Woody, and talk more specifically about them and how to flourish with those. But I'd also like to make sure that we get a good sense of all that you're doing.
No, good. That's where I was going. It took me too long, so thanks for the prompt.
That's important.
So there are things people can do right now to be involved. The first thing is they can join the Slow Money Alliance. Now, that's a pretty typical NGO membership, but it's a way for people to chip in any amount of $25 or more and support the work that we're doing. The second thing is very exciting, very new, and it's called the Soil Trust. We just announced it in June. It's still being all the details are being worked out in the structure, but we are receiving money for it right now on our website. And the Soil Trust is a nonprofit pool of capital that will be capitalized by what we hope will be a large number of small donations every year. And all of that money will be used to provide guarantees, co-investments, and seed capital for, to local slow money investors around the country. So if you zoom back from what I just said, and just think about it as a kind of a new endowment, if you want to call it, a permanent nonprofit fund whose sole purpose will be to co-invest and provide guarantees and seed capital to slow money investors around the country. So it'll be a catalytic investment pool. All the returns will stay in the pool. That's why it's a nonprofit. So we can come back and talk some more about that. The point is, if someone wants to send in $25 or more dollars to that right now, we can receive those dollars. We're just starting, and we're very excited about the potential of this for reasons we can go into. Next, on our website, we have a bunch of other things people can do right now. You don't have to be a fancy, sophisticated investor. If you have $1,000 or more to invest, you can click on this button, and it will link you to a bunch of existing intermediaries, RSF Social Finance, the Carrot Project, Calvert Foundation, groups that offer you opportunities to invest in organic agriculture and local food systems right now. They just wouldn't be targeted to the community where you live. They would just be kind of national intermediaries that are trying to steer money in this direction. And then last but not least, you can come to our events. And again, that's not too, we're not trying to be all things to all people. I know I'm not trying to just promote our organization on the air, but if people are interested, you should stay tuned. We have been doing meetings in different regions. It is highly likely that there will be a significant regional meeting in Austin, Texas in the spring. The next big national slow money meeting is going to be in October of 2011 in Fort Mason, California. But stay tuned, because we are reacting to opportunities to put on regional meetings, you know, along the way.
Beautiful, Woody. But let's be clear here, too, because I know some listeners may not even be as attuned to the issues about the soil, issues about local agriculture, issues from the sustainability context. By doing this, Woody, make a tangible connection here. So what is it that will be different about this versus the industrialized system that we're living within right now? What's the direct link and the contribution?
Well, all kinds of things. The ultimate objective, where we're going to be a decade from now, if and when we're successful, is that we will have created robust relationships between tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of investors and small food enterprises in their communities. This is so basic, John, that it's kind of, how could it possibly be revolutionary? I mean, people have used the word revolutionary to describe what we're doing. It's not my word, but you say, how could it be revolutionary to suggest to investors that they should invest 1% of their money directly in local food systems and small food enterprises near where they live? It's only revolutionary in a world where no systems exist to make that possible, because all of our money is streaming towards centralized, remote commodity agriculture. So that's where that's the very, very concrete objective we're heading towards. If people were to go on our website and look at the 24 presentations, you can click there and see 24 small food enterprises doing 3-minute presentations. These are the actual presentations that were given at our Vermont event. I'm saying that not to promote us per se, but to make it concrete. People can go on and see 24 I hope you can't hear the alarms in the background. I'm outside.
That's okay. That's the alarm. We're talking about the food industrial food system, so it's a good thing to have
on. I'm going to wait for that alarm to go by, the siren. They can hear the actual enterprises, and then to answer your question, John, I think people just need to think, what would it be like if we were doing that in our local community, where a bunch of us were investing in those types of enterprises in our community? And what you would have is more organic matter in the soil, more healthy organic food in the local food systems, more small diversified organic farms in your food shed, more water in your aquifer, less carbon in your atmosphere. So, you know, these are real system-changing things, but the only way we're going to get them is a very large number of small transactions and a large number of investors being involved. So that's why we're focused on that as an objective.
Well, and that's why I wanted to bring it back to Woody, because the reality of it is that we're not getting most of our food from a local source, and our money is not staying local. It's going away. So what you're doing is you're connecting the dots here, and part of our conversation on Zoomed in the sustainability context and in the world that we're pointing into, which may have certain degrees of shocks and all kinds of things coming, is a degree of resilience. And it makes sense on so many levels, not the least of which are all the ones you've talked about here, but it bridges to our conversation and resilience. It's building a resilient community at the same time, Woody, and that's why I just wanted to hear your languaging on that as well.
Yeah, and I always think it's important to add, we're not talking about either or, we're talking about balance.
Yes.
And, you know, people like to get in the food discussion, they like to get into, let's say, something about Whole Foods or something about Stonyfield or something about Walmart or something that they there's always a provocateur in the audience who wants to say, like, these companies are too big and blah, blah, blah. And the answer is, you can decide if you think they're too big or not. I don't think that's really the question. The question is are we going to be better off if we bet that that's all there is as an economy? In other words, everything is bet towards larger and larger distribution, more and more centralized, et cetera. And I think common sense tells you just prudence, diversification, real diversification, not false diversification, means we have to take some of our money and steer it in a different direction. That's all. It's not to take anything away from those entities. It's just to say if we bet everything on that, the chance of collapse is high. So I'm picking up on your resilience theme. You don't have to necessarily believe that the entire world has to change. You just have to believe that we'll be safer and more resilient, to use your word, if we put a little bit of our money to work in a different way.
Well, and I think that's what we try to make the distinction here, Woody, on Zoomed, is we're not trying to provide a doomer view. We're trying to look at the reality of the world we're living in, the systems as they're playing out. What are the through lines? What are the threads? What are the implications? What are the trajectories we started with? And what makes good common sense? But moreover, there's more than just common sense. There's a sense in the belly of what the right thing to do on this is, too. And that's what I really like about the work that you're doing.
Well,
Woody,
I can
hear the music in our ears here. Let's get back. I want to get to the principles here, and I don't want to interrupt as we do that. I want people to get a sense of that. So let's take a short break, folks. Come back. The principles, slow money, understand that. Understand the nature of that as we are beginning to simmer in our communities about taking the responsibility for shifting the systems in our individual actions and collectively put that together. Come back in a minute for the last segment today with Woody. Thank you.
Thanks, John.
Up-to-date business and financial news. Call now and get the financial information you need. 866-472-5790. 866-472-5790.
The experts are here.
Voice America Business Network.
The world is in flux, primed for a great transition, possibly an epical one. How does it impact you? Does it reshape the questions you ask? The way you view leadership. Today's complexities and challenges call for new realms of leadership. The world needs resilience and adaptability, new levels of innovation and brilliance. At Avastone Consulting, we know that our times call for shifts of mind. How do we cultivate real shifts of mind in our leaders? Not through conventional development, which focuses on gaining skills and knowledge within an established worldview. Shifts of mind truly expand the worldview itself, enlarge the capacity to see through new eyes, and transform interpretations of reality and the actions that accompany them. Those who embrace shifts of mind are the kind of leaders that Avastone helps to build. Change the way you pursue the future. Call Avastone Consulting at 1-678-461-888.
1-678-4680. That's 1-678-461-8880. Or visit avastoneconsulting.com. Avastone Consulting, your source for leadership development, working with complex organizations toward evolutionary shifts of mind.
The Marsh Engels Show. Join the movement to empower yourself with the essentials of feminine power and success, and learn how women around the world are becoming more inspired, more influential, and absolutely amazing. Each week, Marsh sits down for an engaging conversation with women who are boldly committed to living their most amazing life. You'll discover ways to step into your greatest vision, deepen your relationships, and unleash your real creative brilliance. Get ready. It's time to jump into the conversation. That's Monday afternoons at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern for the Marsh Engels Show on the Voice America Business Network.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Zoomed Leadership with your host, John Schmidt. For more information about John and our program, visit avastoneconsulting.com. That's A-V-A-S-T-O-N-E consulting.com. Now, back to Zoomed Leadership.
Okay, last segment today, Slow Money, Woody Tash, our guest and stimulant to our great conversation on this. And Woody, we left this last piece here. I was really suggesting that there's a sense of this not only makes sense in the head, but there's a way this really feels right. I'm wondering if you've got a sense of that as well. It feels like there's a lot of passion behind you initiating this and the network that's coming about. Maybe you can comment on that.
Well, there are many different levels to this. There's the kind of what you're going to do, you know, what kind of small enterprise you're going to invest in, how much money you're going to make, is it debt, is it equity, all the technical stuff about moving money into, let's say, what might be called a new asset class, small food enterprises as a new asset class. But there's so much more behind it, which is why I think there's been the kind of buzz about slow money that there has been so far. And that it's more than buzz. It's a kind of a resonance. And it comes from the fact that it's very clear to me, after having spent the last couple of years traveling a lot and talking to many, many thousands of people in dozens of places around the U.S., that a large number of people, now I don't know how large, is it 1 million people, 5 million, 10 million, I don't know. And by the way, maybe that isn't that large of a group in today's world, but it's a bunch of people, really feel, this is to your point on feeling, that things are completely broken, that finance, that just buying low and selling high in their daily lives, they are somehow complicit with something that is so broken that they don't know how to. You don't even know what to do about it. You have to put your money somewhere, so you do. And social investing is the beginning of that. It's like, how do you begin addressing that? But something about the way we've approached the soil and local food has kind of allowed people to kind of jump kind of to the next level and really connect with that feeling in themselves. Things are really broken. I don't want to make believe anymore. Is there a way out? And it actually feels to us, I'm just relating what the experiences we've had, let's say those of us who've been doing this together, it actually feels like beginning to invest in small food enterprises is a way out. It's not the way out, but it's a way towards, let's say, some light at the end of the tunnel. Now, you asked about feeling. It's taken me a while to get there. The feeling part of this is I've come to summarize with a word that sounds very abstract for a discussion of feelings, and it's the word biophilia. The word biophilia, by the way, some people that I'm working with hate it when I use this word because it sounds so abstract, but I haven't caved into them yet. Biophilia was coined by E.O. Wilson, the very, very eminent award-winning conservation biologist at Harvard, who also came up with the term biodiversity a while back. And one of the definitions of biophilia is the innate affection that human beings have for all other living organisms. And I don't know how people feel when they hear that phrase, but it gives me a little bit of goosebumps because you realize, my God, sure, we have a
like
affection,
it.
But
yeah.
We've kind of lost it a little bit. Now, just imagine 1 million investors having biophilia. Imagine that as an investor, you are reconnecting with your innate affection for all other living things. What would you do with your money? Now, that's very big the way I just said. Let me keep going here, John, for a second. I know I'm kind of rambling here a little bit. But that's a big kind of frame for a bunch of feelings. But we did a workshop in Ashland, Oregon about 9 months ago. There were maybe 40 people for an afternoon. And at the end of the afternoon, we shared the slow money principles with the people. We should talk a little bit about the principles in a second. And a woman said, the innate value of this kind of investing is so obvious to me, I don't care how much money I make. Now, that's like a goofy statement. Most professional investors would hear that and they'd want to run out of the room. But it was so beautiful, I never forgot. She said, the innate value of this kind of investing. And I immediately thought of that definition of biophilia, of the innate affection for all the living things. And so the feeling part of this is really important. It's incredibly empowering. It's not, let's say, an excuse for being a sloppy investor. If there's some skeptics out there listening to it, yeah, you can, you know, let's say, talk the left side of your brain to talk you into that. But it really isn't that. It's a really beautiful, powerful way of getting out of our normal boxes as investors and starting to do something different. So the way we are trying to, let's say, use this energy or promote this, you know, kind of spread this feeling is through the slow money principles. And I'll just mention the last one. There are six of them. Again, people can see them, you know, at slowmoney.org. It's very, it's not rocket science. But these are not how-to things. These are statements that are meant to elicit feelings. The last one quotes Paul Newman's, which what happened to be the last sentence in Paul Newman's obituary in the New York Times, where he quotes the following someone saying, in life we need to be more like the farmer who puts back into the soil what he takes out.
Yes.
And then we say, reflecting on the wisdom of those words, let's ask the following questions. What would the world be like if we invested 50% of our money within 50 miles of where we lived? What would the world be like if there was a new generation of companies that gave away 50% of their profits? And what would the world be like if there was 50% more organic matter in our soil 50 years from now? Now, those are not left-brain questions. Those are questions
Yes.
meant to evoke feelings. And I can tell you, because I've been going on here for quite a while, I'll just say, been in rooms with groups of investors who are posed the question, what would the world be like if you had to invest 50% of your money within 50 miles of where you live? And that question makes you feel something. And I hope it's made some of the listeners feel something. But
it makes it personal. It changes
feeling,
the nature of this from being something abstract,
it,
conceptual, something that's just a part of getting money to live. It makes it tangible, brings it close to home, and it makes it part of our life. And that's a big difference, Woody.
Well, actually, the first slow money principle is we must bring money back down to earth, but my good friend Judy Wicks, who is the co-founder of the Business Alliance for Local Living Economies, said, I think you should call it bringing money closer to home. And we kind of went back and forth, but to your comment, yeah, it's bringing it closer and making it more tangible. It's like, what are the outcomes you want from your money? And this is so basic, John, it seems crazy to even have to say these things as an investor. But we've been taught you have to just give your money to experts who you never met to invest in things you don't know where they are, what they're doing, and that's being a smart investor. But how smart is it? This is just about saying, no, I want to know where some of my money is actually going. I want to know that it's doing something tangible close to where I live.
Yes. And so what else? We've got about 2 minutes left here in terms of the principles. Maybe a quick scan of the few there just to get a quick highlight of a couple of others, even by
name.
Well,
one of the other principles presents the idea of nurture capital, that we may be at the beginning of a kind of a new financial industry that would be based on principles of carrying capacity and diversity and nonviolence. And those are some pretty big words to use in a discussion of finance. But coming back to that feeling part, I really think people know in their hearts that we need kind of a sea change like that. I mean, if you have finance that's based on extraction and consumption, you're going to get one kind of world. If you could have finance based on restoration and preservation, you would have another kind of world. So we summarize that in the phrase nurture capital. There's another principle makes reference to wealth now, philanthropy later, meaning that in a world that seems to suggest that if we create another 1,000 billionaires, they'll give away enough money to solve all the problems, I think there's a growing recognition that there's never going to be enough philanthropy like that. What we need to do is have a much more integral approach where we're solving the problems while we're creating the money. So that's another one of the principles. So I think people, you know, can feel the energy of those principles, and I would encourage people to just look through them. And by the way, I'd just like to say this is not an academic exercise. We actually would like people to sign them.
Yes, so, absolutely. Yep.
This is a very simple first step, but as I said earlier in the program, I really believe it's vitally important that people realize that the first action we are taking here as investors is to admit publicly that we're going to change the way we think about money.
Woody, I think that's fabulous. And what I love about what you're doing is integrate so well with our conversation about leadership, about empowering ourselves and the nature of the movement we need that's not too big. It comes down to some basics. Woody, God, I really appreciate you coming on today and the good work here. Fabulous. Thank you for coming on
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
Great. And listeners, in appreciation of that, go ahead to take a look at Woody's book, Inquiries into the Nature of Slow Money. Get on the website, slowmoneyibelieve.org or .com, believe.org.
.org.
But also, .org, yes. But recognize, I think, folks, where Woody has really talked about in his last segment, I think is where we're talking about from that up-close and personal perspective. It's the innate connections with who we are, with ourselves, with others, and the world. We're connecting in different ways, and we're connecting the dots on our money, on our investments, with our life, with slow money, and with local food. And the way that we use that seems to me this is a microcosm for a larger view of our investment strategy as a whole, all kinds of implications. This is one way to start. And Woody, thanks for being with us to stimulate the conversation on that today.
Thanks again, John.
Okay, good enough. Listeners, we'll join to continue next week, continue at multiple levels here, big picture, up close and personal, but all about the world of desirable futures. That's what Woody brought to us today. Thanks. Have a great week. Enjoy. Bye-bye.
Thank you again for listening to Zoomed Leadership with host John Schmidt. Please be sure to join us again next Monday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel. And have a terrific week.